ever watched this before. Charlie and I get to talk about interesting news stories, and we take your questions live. You put them in on the chat, we can see them. Or you can always drop them in as an email on any of these videos after they've been recorded, and you can watch them then. This eventually becomes a podcast on all podcasting platforms, and you'll find it under Talking Tech. And my phone is vibrating because I think we're live on everything.
Yep, I'm sure.
So my name is Sean Walsh. I'm your Emerging Services and Technologies Librarian, and with me as always...
I'm Charlie. I'm the Guiding Ohio Learning Coach here at the Public Library.
All right, so let's go ahead and start out with some stories, and then as we get some viewers, we can reach out and answer their questions if they have any. So go ahead, Charlie. Why don't you get started? Yeah. I'm going to share this out in a couple places.
Well, why not? I'm going to talk about how Apple is going to support RCS messaging.
Oh, that's cool.
In 2024.
Nice.
So not only will Android support RCS, which is a more secure messaging platform, now you'll be able to talk to both your friends, family that use iPhones and all that cool stuff too.
Getting it out there, yeah.
Yes, especially because, I mean, SMS and MMS have always been there, but they have gotten a little spooky.
Yes, vastly spooky.
Which RCS is supposed to hopefully fix that, but we will see. But, you know, they're just ready for something new. I mean, Apple has kind of been pushing to modernize some of their stuff as well lately. So, I mean, with the the EU kind of pushed this one as well as their Type-C stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, good on the EU for pushing those things to actually get things back up to speed, but we'll see how quickly. I mean, they say 2024, but we'll maybe hear from Apple that it's only on the newer phones that they'll get the...
Okay. That's usually what they
but
do.
But we'll see. They'll start with the newer stuff and then move into the older stuff. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
But no more green bubbles. Well, I guess they are staying green, but
yeah,
that's besides the point.
Yeah. I like the interoperability. You know, everybody's kind of siloed. And, you know, that's what it felt like in the 90s. You know, we would use things like Trillian that allow you to grab in various, you know, because you had AOL Instant Messenger, you had MSN. You had IRC, you had all those things. You needed to try and drag them into one place because otherwise you had like a million little clients running everywhere.
And you couldn't keep track of them all.
Exactly.
For the most part.
Exactly. So that's cool. That's cool. So figuring that 'tis the season, we'll start with some holiday coverage here. And probably our December show, we will definitely have some holiday coverage. But I want to talk about Google, okay. Our friend Google, is
what's
using
Google doing now?
AI to help you with your holiday shopping. So you can basically use Google to say, hey, I'm shopping for a four-year-old who's interested in this, this, and this. Okay?
Give me suggestions.
Give me suggestions. And it'll go out and pull down and say, okay, I found this from Amazon. I found this from this retailer. Maybe it's like, you know, I'm looking for an eight-year-old who's interested in dinosaurs, and they may come back with one of those dinosaur digging kits.
Yeah.
You know, where you use the little tool and the little hammer and you dig it out. Or maybe they'll come back and say, here's a dinosaur skeleton or some dinosaur information. Kind of helps you with the, you know, people that are hard to buy for sometimes. I know I'm notoriously hard to buy for my family. And so they'll probably be using Google for that. But yeah, check it out. You know, basically Google's helping you do suggestions, and this is kind of a nice way to kind of use AI. Mm-hmm. This is what it's for, is basically mining a ton of data and saying, okay, what is available right now? What's popular? What's interesting for this age range and maybe these interests?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, kind of going along the lines of your Google, not necessarily shopping, but this one's more towards your entertainment side of things.
Uh-huh.
Google is also making a Netflix-like AI-powered recommendations tool.
Okay.
Using their Google Cloud.
All right.
So it's just essentially, you know, is just personalization for recommendations.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're trying to push AI to be more of a tool to help you find what you're looking for, like you were doing with your shopping part here.
Yeah, use the data. Use the data that's out there. That's really what AI is really for, is crunching data. It's less Skynet and scary things than it is being able to conglomerate a ton of data into one place and then give you more of an interface to communicate with.
Yeah, because this could go to like every single streaming platform or a rent platform, and it will just be like, hey, this place has this available. You may like this movie because you watched, I don't know, insert some movie
here. Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, it's kind of a cool little piece of tech that they're actually putting out.
I'm hoping
that
at some point our car catalog will do something like that, where it'll say, hey, you know, once you're logged in, oh, hey, Sean, you really like, you know, science fiction, fantasy, and horror books. You know, here are our three newest authors, or the three newest books by an author you like, or an upcoming author, or something like that. That would be nice. You know, it's essentially what Amazon does to a certain extent. Yeah. They mine your account and find out where, you know, the different places go. But it, I think it'd be kind of cool for us, especially in libraries, because there are people who walk in and get that say it all the time. I've read everything Ken Follett has ever written, or I've read every Patterson book there is. Is there anybody else other than Patterson? Or, you know, heaven forbid your favorite author passes away and they don't continue to write as that author. Tom Clancy. Clive Cussler. There's a whole bunch of people who are still writing who aren't with us anymore. VC Andrews. You know, so it would be nice to be able to say, oh, you know, I love Tom Clancy. You know, who writes like Tom Clancy? Or who's a new author that writes like Tom Clancy?
Yeah, similar to,
you know, there are, you get in these ruts, you know, and you kind of get, you're like, oh my gosh, you know.
Because, you know, you're either kind of pushing out of the zone of what you used to read, and you're like, well, this is not really what I want to do, so I'll just go back and read the old stuff again, you know. Like, it's they're going to try to push you out of your comfort zone, but at the same time, to try to find similar-esque kind
of things. The first library I worked at, a couple of the ladies I worked with loved to, they were my recommendation engine, because they knew I only read a certain genre. And so they would find things that had some sort of tie into that genre, but be something else. That's how I, like, you know, I discovered, you know, there are mysteries I would actually read because they have a high-end technology bend to it.
Yeah.
Something like a Lincoln Child's Utopia or something like that. You know, or Daniel Serez, I think I pronounced his name wrong. All of his books are a combination of thriller and, like, sci-fi and gaming. In fact, you would love them, because some of his novels are all about gaming and kind of how the game world bleeds into the real world. It's really cool. So we digressed into recommendation engines, but hey, you know,
and somehow, some way.
Yeah. But, so I'm going to keep on this path a little bit.
Yeah.
By the way, feel free as you're watching, put a question into the chat and whatever social media you're currently viewing us on, and we'll see it on the screen in front of us, the giant screen in front of us, and we'll be able to answer your questions. Otherwise, we're going to keep talking about tech news. So, on the whole front with still, we're going to, I guess we're going to run it through Google a couple times. So, Google Maps is, customizing, and they've been doing this for a while. I mean, this is how Waze works too, by the way. Waze is sitting on top of Google. So don't let Waze people tell you they're not using Google Maps. It's Google Maps.
No, they are.
It's just an overlay over top of it. Mm-hmm. So it's not anything, you know, it's Waze adding stuff to Google Maps. That's all it really is. It's like, an outfit, you know. It's a new pair of shoes. But Google Maps is helping you decide when's the best time to leave to arrive at your place for Thanksgiving.
Okay.
So let's just say you're traveling. You know, we've always had these recommendations from our own family to say, hey, don't take the I-90, you know, at this time. Don't take 11 at this time. Don't take 80 at this time. Well, because
we've heard of the routes to not to take
during
holiday season.
Or I know some of my friends travel, you know, in or around New York or Washington, D.C. or any of those places. And there's just, there are times not to drive on, like, I-95. It just does not. Google takes into consideration, so it's also taking consideration people who are working, so your average work traffic. But overall data patterns that say, okay, if you need to get to this place at 4 o'clock, generally, the traffic is this much level, this much speed. This is what's going on with construction, all this stuff, and then gives you the best time to leave.
Okay, so it actually takes in consideration everything that you could run into until it's not reported, maybe.
Until it's not reported.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or, you know, I'm still trying to think of, it's that watching the thing changes the thing concept in science. So by everyone changing their patterns on when they're going to leave for wherever they're going for Thanksgiving, does that then change the overall matrix itself? You know,
maybe.
Are you modifying it?
Maybe.
You know, it's fascinating.
Maybe it will just live update at times.
Yeah, it probably does.
Hopefully.
Because again, the information from Waze, the information from Google goes back into the same database. So you, when you report a slowdown, everyone knows, you know, because it's still sitting on top of Google. So cool. What else you got?
Well, I'm going to kind of talk about, I mean, since we're on to the hot topic of buying holiday gifts for the season.
Tis the season. Tis the season.
So Amazon will now let you track buy with Prime orders from your Amazon account.
Okay.
So to kind of explain the buy with Prime thing here. So typically when you go to any other website that's not Amazon, sometimes you will find that you can pay for an item with their buy with Amazon Pay.
Okay, so they're like acting as the payment processor.
Yes.
Okay.
So they're both payment processor, and then they become your tracking agent as well.
Which is nice.
So that's essentially what Amazon's trying to do this holiday season with their buy with Prime stuff. So essentially what you'd be able to do is just go to a website, as long as Amazon supports that website with their Amazon Pay with Prime kind of thing, or buy with Prime, sorry. You'll get the 2-day shipping that Amazon always does. So that means they have a partnership with Amazon.
2-day shipping.
Yep.
I'm going to put that in air quotes because it's 2-day shipping from when the order has been released. The order could take a while to be released.
Yeah, depending on where you buy it from, of course.
Yeah.
Or it could show up at your house like 3 hours later.
Yeah, there's always a, because you can't hear Melanie in the background. She's not mic'd up. But yeah, the famous, you ordered it and it shows up like an hour later, because we do have like 3 Amazon warehouses in our geographic area, because Ohio's cool because we have some great networking ability for moving packages and things. And so it's almost like, you know, tracking from Amazon is, you know, normal tracking. It's going to be here in 2 days. Amazon, we're behind you. You know, you ordered it, we're behind you with the thing.
Because I've had a few times where it's like you order it the same day and then it shows up by the end of day sometimes, depending on if it's in warehouse or not, and the trucks haven't left yet.
But exactly.
Some cities I've heard that you can order something, it shows up at your house in an hour.
Yeah.
Like, it just really depends on where you live.
Well, I was talking to someone who works for Amazon, and so they have the opportunity to make several trips back to the warehouse.
Oh, okay.
And so they grab so many that'll fit in their vehicles, because they're not using an Amazon van, they're using their own vehicle.
Oh, you're talking about like the ones where they hire a driver, kind of like
Uber,
DoorDash,
like whatever. Yeah. And so they're working up to a vehicle. Because you have to get so much to get a vehicle and then lease the vehicle, and then you can pay it off, actually.
Oh, okay.
So what it comes down to is they have the opportunity to take as many as they can fit in their car.
Yeah.
And so they have a hatchback kind of thing, crossover hatchback. So they got a decent amount of space in the back.
Yeah, they've got a good amount.
And so they'll do like maybe 20 packages, depending on the size, 20 packages, 30 packages, whatever. And they'll do like 3 or 4 runs in a day. And the more they do, the more they kind of climb up and get paid and all that stuff. Yeah. So it's only in their benefit to do that. And so, this person's pushing. So he could pick up an order that was placed, you know, within the time frame of him delivering the previous set of packages.
As long as the warehouse has fulfilled it.
Exactly.
Just grab it and take it back.
It's fast. So that's kind of cool that Amazon is kind of reaching in there, because that makes sense in their market.
Yeah.
Because it was nice when, you know, a lot of retailers that weren't Amazon retailers just started doing buy with Amazon.
Yeah. Well, another thing too is that they also opened up their 24/7 support number as well, in case that you have issues with the tracking for the package.
All right. Makes sense.
So Amazon will also communicate with the seller to make sure that your package is either leaving on time or if it's on its way. So that's another cool thing. Oh, and also they'll be able to do more return eligible orders and more drop-off locations.
That would be nice. That would be nice.
Considering the one location was the Rite Aid that was here. no longer here anymore.
Yeah, there's another location in Madison, isn't there?
Is there?
I don't know.
I haven't looked up. But like, I know the last time, well, Rite Aid's gone right now, but like now this could open up more places to drop off your ambulance packages to be taken back.
I would love to get one of those lockers for the library. There is a library in Lake County that has one of the Amazon lockers at their place. I'm very interested in doing that to just make it easier for people that, hey, the library is here and it's a good place to pick up and drop off, you know? So, and we're, you know, if we put it outside, it's available 24/7. So that's trying to get that. Haven't made any progress there yet. So don't hold your breath, but, it makes sense.
It'd be cool though.
So, okay. Now we'll get off of the Google train for a minute. Some folks at MIT and a couple other places are working on a new way of 3D printing that the 3D printer actually watches itself function.
Okay.
And then evaluates how the print is going. So now, Charlie and I have survived many, many a print that's gone awry. You might even have watched some of our prints because we do stream them on.
You'll see the occasional hand pop in through
the
door.
The hand pop in. But you know, if you've watched some of our prints, we've had some prints that there's been flaws with either something happened with output for the filament or the image has issue or the file has issues and we discover that partway through the print.
Or the printer knocks it over.
The printer knocks it over, yeah.
You know, I've had that happen a few times.
So we watch those. That's why we run the camera, in all honesty. So we're running a long print job. Someone needs to kind of check in on it because, you know, it's running.
Exactly, because it's the easy thing to do when you can just watch the live stream and be like,
watch the live stream, well, run back over like, okay, that thing broke. Where we got
to
fix it.
And they have to rush and turn it off.
So what they're doing is a 3D printer that kind of watches itself.
Okay.
So one, it catches errors right away and says, hey, I just knocked this thing over. Stop the job.
Yeah, that'd be
cool. Or the other thing is it's looking at it going, you know, we're building this, but that filament isn't sticking enough or there isn't enough in this spot. I'm going to alter how I'm printing and add a little bit more here or there. Live.
Oh, so it's
self-healing, sort of.
Okay, so it doesn't just stop. Because like the thing with our printer right now
is it just stops?
It just stops. Because it will say, "Hey, filament's not coming out.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to stop the job so you can look at it and make sure it's fine." But if this printer is actually going to sit there and be like, "Okay, well, there's not enough filament here. Let me go back there, try it again, maybe a few times to see if it works." That'd be awesome.
Yeah,
honestly, I would be in on that printer.
So it kind of gauges, yeah, it's gonna be expensive to start out with, but it's kind of gauging how it's printing. So it's a little bit more of an intelligent print. That's what this is gunning for. So it has multiple cameras. It's kind of watching itself, and it, you know, it's smart enough to go, hey, yeah, this doesn't look right, or hey, you know, this is what I'm supposed to be printing. This is what I'm not printing.
Yeah, this is what I'm getting. This is not what I'm getting.
Correct. So it can alter itself midway. Mm-hmm. So it's just kind of cool.
Yeah.
So what you got?
Well, so the phone company, nothing.
Love the name.
It's a funny name.
Love the name. Love the name.
So the Nothing Phone 2 will allow iMessaging on its phone itself.
Okay.
On it, but also understand that Nothing is an Android device.
Nothing is an Android device.
Yes.
This is gonna get into a weird conversation, isn't it?
Conversation slash way to explain this. Yes. Yeah. So.
Nothing is something.
Yes.
But something is also nothing.
So Nothing is a phone company that started around 2020, 2021. They were kind of like pushing the iPhone of Androids. And that's what they're still doing, as you can tell by me talking about it anyway. But this will be the first Android OEM. So
original equipment
that has integrated Apple iMessaging.
This is fascinating.
So this will be the
first
time.
We're starting to kind of break down those silos.
Yes, I think slowly but surely we will start to see, because Nothing may get it first, but then that doesn't mean that we will all get it eventually.
It's like someday I want to be an author who writes a book called The, because like you can look up the book The, and just totally frazzle out all card catalogs in history.
Exactly.
With the.
I'm following Charlie's story now.
Yes. Well, nothing is something and something is nothing, but nothing is getting Apple soon.
Yeah. That's the only way to explain it. Or I could just say a phone is getting iMessaging.
It's a very early morning. It's afternoon just about, but man. You needed coffee for the nothing story.
We got about 10 minutes before it actually hits.
Yeah, coffee
noon.
For the yeah. All right.
Yeah. So this will be a wake up tongue brain teaser for everybody. I guess, this morning.
Exactly. I could see it now. What do you have in your pocket? Nothing. It's your phone, isn't it? Yeah, it's nothing.
Yep, it's nothing.
Uh-huh. It's like talking to a toddler. What's in your pocket? Nothing. You know, there's something in there.
Yeah.
All right. So MIT and Harvard partnered up.
Okay.
And they're working on a way to transform carbon dioxide into a format fuel.
Okay.
So format fuels are basically, we use a bunch of different formats, but essentially the material would function like hydrogen or methane.
Okay.
Okay. So you take the CO2 that's been released by whatever. Could be a coal scrubber on a coal plant. It could be a vehicle emission. Could be just captured in the air. What they can do with this process, and it's kind of But I'm trying to make it not so chemically engineering and physically.
Yeah, I got you. Yeah.
But basically what they do is they distill down the carbon dioxide into this formate. This formate is either solid or liquid. And then you literally then, you know, pump the liquid into a vehicle that's specially set up to run this and it burns. Okay. And the same thing with the solid thing, you chuck essentially the formate brick into your fireplace. It burns.
Yeah.
The irony is that it makes more carbon dioxide, so it basically is self-replenishing. So I'm kind of fascinated by this. It'll be kind of cool to follow this. Again, it's real early on, but you know, we use formates in a lot of places. Sodium is one of those formates that we use a lot in industry right now. So keep watching this, because if in theory we could grab all this carbon dioxide, we could make then solid fuel to do stuff with. It's not as efficient as a hydrocarbon, but not much is. But then you can literally then take the CO2, which then means that you have fuel on planets like, you know, Mars. It's just full of CO2. And now you have a ready fuel source, which is kind of cool. So this is fascinating to kind of watch as we're starting to, you know, move on to, are we going into, you know, different planets, you know, going to
eventually
the moon again
at some point.
Yeah, right? So we're not going to talk about Elon, SpaceX crashing again.
Yeah, we'll worry about that later. Well, that'll be another time.
The one thing I was thinking about is, you know, if the Apollo program had social media, you know, as many things that went wrong as as those folks were learning about how to get, you know, Saturn missiles and all of that stuff up, you know, we wouldn't have as much faith in what we did in the past either. There's kind of a black box mystery about, you know, some of the stuff that happened was recovered by reporters, but a lot of stuff wasn't because there wasn't social media everywhere. So, you know, so as Blue Origin, SpaceX, and a couple of the other companies have their learning moments.
Yeah.
Some of them are spectacularly, explosively big learning moments,
yep,
as this last one was. But as they learn, then, you know, we move forward. And, you know, as long as no one gets hurt in the big boom, we learned something. And I'll do that again.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So it's cool.
Yeah. So kind of talking about your...
Oh, I saw this story, dude. Yeah.
So ExxonMobil, so the the leading, well, not necessarily leading, but one of the major gasoline companies is now becoming a lithium company.
Oh, sweet. I've been reading this. Yeah. So, it makes sense. It makes sense for them to invest. So, Exxon invested in other stuff in the past too.
So they're kind of, they're pushing the, you know, zero emissions by 2030 kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But they're going to try and start producing lithium in 2027. And it could make enough to supply over a million electric vehicles by 2030.
And they're mining in Arkansas, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Arkansas.
Which is not a state you usually associate with lithium. Usually it's like out west in like Utah or some of those places that have a lot of salt, because lithium likes to hang out with salt. At least from what I've gathered so far. And so it is fascinating to see that, you know, Arkansas, which is, I think I could be wrong, but I think it's the easternmost lithium mine in the United States at this point. So, it makes sense for Exxon to diversify.
Yeah. It says the company will first drill 10,000 feet below the surface using gas and oil machinery. From there, it will use direct lithium extraction.
Could we talk about this like three or four tech news ago?
To separate the lithium from the salt water it's mixed with. Once that's done, Exxon will eject the salt water back into the ground.
Yeah.
So just putting
it back. It's a brine well, essentially. But it's starting out with brine and putting brine back.
Yeah, and then I'm assuming that after, you know, so much lithium has been made, and they can push maybe electric tools at some point, because they mention that they're currently using gas and oil.
Yeah, which makes sense because they own it.
Yeah,
and so, that's actually good for the, you know, this kind of stuff. You know, it was good for the steel industry.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to see agencies that were supplying pipe for oil and gas, especially in Ohio, light back up again, that may have been shuttered because of, you know, this technology, you basically using oil and gas rigs to extract out the lithium. So there's a lot of lithium that isn't in a metal state. It's in, I won't say a liquid state, but it's like inside something.
Yeah.
Lithium, you know, in this case is in salt water.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. In a brine. In fact, brine is a good, better term than salt water, because brine kind of encompasses a whole bunch of things. Because lithium, again, loves salt. So that's cool. That's very cool.
Yeah. And they're even talking about how some places are even looking at other places. Like the Thacker Pass in Nevada, I guess, is another mining spot that they're going for. And as well as people are eyeing California's Salton Sea as potential extraction sites as well.
Oh, okay.
That could mean that the Great Salt Lake in Utah could also be a prime
place for it. Oh, yeah. There's all kinds of things in there.
At some point. Yeah. But
all the salt flats, yeah.
Well, I think, but that's under National Park Registry, isn't it? So they technically can't.
Well,
but that doesn't mean they can talk into something about it. So.
There's ways around some of that stuff.
Yeah.
And in an environmentally friendly way, mind you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's cool.
Yeah, so lithium mining has started, and we will see how it goes.
Yeah, I'm all for that, because there could be lithium all around Ohio, too, for all we know, and some of the brine there.
I mean,
there's a ton of salt in Ohio that we forget about. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, just near us is the big Morton salt up mine, by, what is that?
Fairport,
and there's one... There's a huge one in Cleveland that goes underneath the lake, but there's one at Headlands Beach. There's a Morton. That's sort of Fairport. Okay.
Mentor Fairport-ish, yeah.
Sorry, not being from the county.
No, you're good.
But yeah, there's tons of stuff in all of that salt left over from oceans.
I mean,
because there's tons of lithium in the ocean too. If we could just get extracted out cheaply, we could.
I mean, look at Intel coming in here for silicon.
Intel, Amazon, yeah, big time, big time. So yeah, hey, let's talk about robots. Why not? We love robots here. So you've probably seen more and more of these drone demonstrations where they kind of act like a swarm and make a picture. You know, they'll fly up and take individual positions and then, you know, make something. They've done something over some sporting events and things like that lately. More and more research is being developed into looking at how birds and insects associate amongst themselves. So think like a bee colony, you know, where the bees do their dance to inform other bees that, hey, there's a huge patch of flowers 10 miles to the west, whatever. You know, studies have been done for this for years. They're looking at drones and other things to function that way too. So in essence, the drones become smarter because they become a school of fish instead of an individual fish.
Makes sense.
Okay. A swarm of bees versus an individual bee, and become more effective. You know, we talked about, I don't know how long ago, we talked about drones 3D printing a house, essentially, kind of the way wasps go out and, you know, eat some wood and then turn it into essentially like a paper and then create their paper cones. This would be a similar technology where, you know, the drones pass the information amongst themselves. So for example, say, a cement truck is dropping off cement in a hopper for them to withdraw to build with. Okay, and that hopper is empty. And another truck comes at a different port in the job site. Sorry, my brain stopped for a second. The drones then know, hey, I just passed a full hopper over there. Let's spread out to everybody else. Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit of AI, but it's mostly more like animal thinking. You know, why do Canadian geese and ducks in general fly in a V so they can see, you know, who's in charge? Okay, we'll follow the leader and everybody within eyesight see everybody else so we can follow in a pattern. You know, why do birds do awesome kind of giant shapes as they fly around? Mm-hmm. All of that is being applied to drones and other things, not just in the air, but on the ground as well. If you can imagine, you know, a swarm coming out to mow your grass and weed your plants and all that stuff, and then go back into their little hidey hole for a little while, which would be cool. So what else you got going there?
Well, I mean, this one's not any of the stories I have up here, but there was, it was a Facebook news story that I saw, so I don't know how credible it is.
Mm-hmm.
But I heard that, kind of going back to your drone side here, there's a Chick-fil-A in Florida that is planning to do mobile food delivery via drone.
Okay. So you can don't have to wait in that line around the Chick-fil-A place that now they're remodeling Chick-fil-A places to make the lines bigger.
Exactly. And then you don't have to wait for your driver to go through said line or go into the store to pick it up and then bring it to you. What they'll do is they'll load up the drone, send it up, and then send it straight to your house.
Waffle fries on demand.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I mean, Amazon kind of did that with smaller packages.
Amazon's starting to do more of it. That we talked about that place in Australia a couple of tech newses ago that's been doing it pretty heavily. Mm-hmm. It makes sense to a certain extent to carry small packages, and I could see food being a small package. Mm-hmm. And in some environments, it makes sense, you know, versus Uber or DoorDash or whatever to do the deliveries. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of cool. I like seeing more like convenient ways, mm-hmm. I would say, of delivering things, because don't get me wrong, I don't mind, you know, dropping off packages in a truck, you know, mm-hmm. dropping it off at your mm-hmm. porch, stuff like that. But I think like a more direct to you via one drone mm-hmm. and no other packages to get mixed up with. I mean, don't get me wrong, a drone could mess up its location as well. Been known to happen. So, I mean, may still be some mistakes, but, you know, maybe it'd be a little bit quicker, mm-hmm. I think, than waiting for you being the last package on the Amazon route, and then you have to wait until the estimated to be here by 10 o'clock.
Yes, estimated message. To be here. It's more like it's still Amazon. We're behind you.
Yeah, because I've had that a few times.
Yeah, lots of people connecting today. So, yeah, that's cool. So what's your next?
Well, the next thing, kind of going back to EV charging.
As we do often.
Yeah. Well, because that's becoming the next.
It's the next thing to think about.
Yeah, the next thing to think about. Especially after, you know, gasoline and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Not eventually go away, but like slowly have to come down in mm-hmm. usage. So
absolutely.
Mercedes-Benz.
Yes.
It has opened its first 400 kilowatt EV charging station in the U.S.
Fascinating.
And it's located at the headquarters in Atlanta, or the U.S. headquarters.
Yeah,
not Mercedes-Benz entirely. That's over in Germany. We're not going to talk about that. But it's also soon to be the first of 400 other EV hubs that Mercedes-Benz is going to build across the country.
Okay,
as a $1 billion investment for Yes, exactly, $1 billion. Now, I don't know exactly what standard they're going off of, but they're...
I don't know what standard they use for their vehicles.
Yeah. I know a lot of them, like Ford and them, are going with Tesla's mm-hmm. charger, making them a standard. And then there's one going off of another general standard that I can't remember what it is. But there's like two typical standards
I think
that
people are going with. I think GM has a standard.
Okay.
GM or Honda, one of those, they may have been both of them, decided on a standard themselves. So we're back to format wars.
Well, GM and Honda are working together on EVs.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming that maybe it's a Honda and GM
standard. We're back on a format war.
I'm not 100% sure, but it's
HD DVD versus Blu-ray. Someone's going to win, you know. I did see a article recently kind of on yours that there are police officers now carrying battery packs and adapters.
Hmm.
So, and I guess AAA potentially is doing as well.
So that in case you run out of power.
If you run out of power.
It should give you enough to possibly make it to the next.
Basically they have little generators or little power packs and then a set of adapters to kind of handle everybody's kind of car. So they just pop on the adapter end, mm-hmm. plug it into your car. You know, it's not the fastest thing in the world, but it'll get you where you need to be.
I mean,
I'm still fascinated about, because we talked a while back about a company that drives around and basically has a giant generator in the back of the truck that they just
kind of makes point
speed charge vehicles.
It'd be cool, but at the same time, it's kind of defeating the purpose of little to no emissions by 2030.
Well, but they're speed charging in some way or another. They could be burning that carbon fuel we talked about in the future. Yeah. You know, who knows?
Yeah, but this one even talks about how GM is building the network at Pilot Flying J truck stops.
Hey, that could be one by us then, huh?
Exactly. And then how Volvo is actually paying to install chargers at Starbucks locations across the U.S.
Yeah, that's smart marketing. Yeah, I mean, I wish, you know, I've been looking into getting chargers for the library here because it would make sense. Because if you're charging your vehicle, wouldn't it be nice to just charge your vehicle, come in, hang out at our place, mm-hmm. you know? And so I'm working on that, you know, hopefully at some point in the near future, we'll have some spots so that someone could pull off of 90 or 2 or wherever they're traveling across the U.S., pull into our library, enjoy all of the awesomeness that is our building, and charge their vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be cool.
Another thing about the at least the Mercedes-Benz ones is that they're going to have a lounge that you can sit at.
Yeah, well, it's a Mercedes. I'm gonna go on this one. It's a Mercedes. It better have a lounge.
Yeah, so
there better be good coffee and tea.
There's a lounge, and then you can buy refreshments and drinks from them.
Fries, vending machines, providing me stuff.
I know.
I bought a Mercedes,
you
know.
So, but they will have 15-foot-tall signs to tell you that there's a stall open, so that you don't have to necessarily drive through like a gas station and be like, "All right, so I don't have an open pump. I have to kind of pass and go somewhere else."
Yeah.
But this is looking to be more like a, hey, you know, off the side of the highway.
Well,
hey,
to me, it would make sense that the vehicle itself would have something that says, yes, pull off here because we know that there's three available spots because the chargers aren't in action. They should know that information.
Yeah. Well, depending on obviously which EV you purchase, I mean, they may have that technology incorporated. They may not.
Yeah.
I don't know if Tesla has.
Tesla does. I don't think that it's out there, but they have it. Yeah.
Because I know like their cars have it, but I'm not 100% sure if Tesla kind of is like.
No, they don't have a patent on that. No.
Yeah. So then maybe.
Because that's queuing and first come, first serve. Mm-hmm. And that some of the stuff has existed forever on multiple things. Because they, you know, there's a lot of businesses that use that technology.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we're in format wars. We're in format wars again. Mm-hmm. We're Nintendo versus Sega. We're, you know, Blu-ray versus HD DVD. We're VHS versus Beta. It's just, what's your charger look like?
Yeah.
And where are you going to drive your car to? Oh, eventually. Exactly. It's all going to boil out, just like the Apple charger is boiling into a USB-C.
It's going to become the either one standard fits all,
mm-hmm.
or it's going to become you need to just bring adapters with you in case that you do start to run low on juice somewhere halfway there.
Yeah, you know, and I can also understand the bringing in the adapters. I mean, if you travel outside the U.S.,
mm-hmm.
There are about 3 or 4 adapters you need, depending on what countries you're going to.
Yeah, you know, because they use different power plugs.
Power plugs in a different cycle. You
know, yeah, exactly.
So it's, you know, the 60 hertz versus, I can't think what the other one is, whatever the European is.
It's like straight 240, I thought.
Well, it's 240, but the hertz is different.
I think it's 120. I'm not sure. It's a higher rating than us, I think.
Yeah, I can't remember what it is. It might be 6120 because that's on the back of the PC.
Yeah.
That may be what it is.
Yeah.
But yeah, whatever. Yeah, so you may have to just carry a box of adapters in your trunk, you know, for playing in your car.
Yeah,
exactly.
Oh yeah, I definitely like seeing.
I did see a guy though. I was stopped at a rest stop, and I did see a guy who was sitting there with a little Honda or Yamaha generator charging his car.
Hey, I mean that's smart. If you want to just plop it right there.
Yeah, that was his battery backup, basically.
I mean, hey, you can buy solar generators too that will do about the same.
Yeah, unless you're living in Northeast Ohio.
Yeah, that's true.
Today's a sunny day, but no, or in the winter, not enough power. So that's cool. So I think we're gonna have a moment here. Because Best Buy is definitely discontinuing providing DVDs in their stores. So, you know, we watched this. I've been in libraries long enough to watch a bunch of formats die. You know, I watched LPs die when they came back, but watched LPs die. I watched cassettes die. I watched VHS die.
Mm-hmm.
I expected DVD to die a couple of years ago with Blu-ray and HD DVD at the time. You know, now that we just have Blu-ray. This isn't all.
This is saying.
But it's a moment.
All disc format is dying.
Well, essentially, all disc format is dying. There's no question about that. With game consoles and cars coming out without having disc drives, essentially. Yeah. I mean, my new car doesn't have one.
I mean, looking at how
new to me, I should say.
I mean, looking at how especially like Xbox is doing essentially discless consoles nowadays. Mm-hmm. And even other ones, PlayStation, I think is slowly pushing that way too.
Well, Sony's going to hold on to discs as long as possible because they own Blu-ray.
They own the standard.
They own the standard.
They made the standard.
Yeah. But what you're going to see is, you know, just like, cause again, I've been around long enough and Miss Melanie in the background there has been around long enough that, you know, we were there during the conversation of how long should we hold on to VHS tapes at the library? Because we're the only place left. If you only have a VHS player, you know, and I have a feeling, you know, again, libraries are probably going to be the last place that you can go find a DVD, you know, I'm also going to be interested to see what they do with the... There's still a lot of cars out there that only have DVD players for their entertainment.
That's true. Yeah.
You know, and, you know, are they going to retrofit them? Are you going to be able to go into a Best Buy and get it changed over, you know, and streaming in cars? That would be interesting. You'd have to store stuff on drives because...
Well, considering the fact that, like...
As you drive around.
Well, a lot of your cars nowadays come with a built-in hotspot that usually you have to pay for.
Yes.
But you can even just...
You have to pay for it.
But sometimes people will actually pay for it if it makes it easier for them to use it. Because like looking at how some cars are going to subscriptions now for certain features of a car.
Subscriptions for everything.
Yeah. Like a Mercedes-Benz, I think, was one of them that if you wanted heated seats, you had to pay for a subscription from them to use those.
If you don't pay for that subscription, do you end up with a cold posterior? That's a question.
I know the
I'm sorry, I didn't pay my bill today. So apparently the car's gonna be awful cold on the way into work today.
I know one of the memes around was the BMW charging for blinker use.
Well, driving as much as I drive, people have already been saving on their blinker use as it is.
I know.
There was a person in front of me that I don't think they used their brakes or their blinkers this morning. They just kind of like rolled off of 90. They just rolled. They didn't even stop the ramp.
That sounds about right.
You know, it was one of those moments I was really wishing that our friends from the Village Police Department were sitting somewhere. Like, this person just like didn't stop, didn't blink, just like rolled through the intersection.
Went right through.
And I'm like, it'd be really nice if our village folks are right there just picking them up for being silly. I was going to say something else, but I was going to say it's being silly.
Yeah. I mean, I watched a guy fly past me going out towards the Menor area.
Mm-hmm.
Conveniently, the nice county sheriff was sitting in an old gas station that no longer is there and pulled right out.
I love cheering on our safety services like police officers when they do stuff like that. It's beautiful. It's beautiful.
Yes.
So, you know, as we've gotten viewers on and off, don't forget you can ask questions in our chat and we'll answer them live as best we can. And if we don't have an answer, we'll get back to you. So feel free to throw something in the chat. We'd love to hear from you and see you.
We just like talking about news.
Yeah. So we
interrupt
always,
us. Yeah. If you want.
Yeah.
If you don't want to hear tech news anymore, just interrupt us.
Interrupt us. Yes. Yeah, so Best Buy dropping DVDs is a big change because they're a maker. They're a line because they were actually looking at buying the technology to make DVDs. Mm-hmm. They were going to buy out some of the factories, so they need to be buying more towards the Blu-ray end of things and owning the production.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a very Carnegie kind of thing, owning the whole production field.
I would say I think it's kind of weird how we went from talking about the goodbye DVDs and CDs and things at Best Buy to somehow talking about our first responders pulling people over.
Yep.
Somehow that trailed into that. But you know what? We've ranted on to different topics before, so I guess that makes sense. I think my next thing I want to talk about is... Why not bring up the NFT thing again?
Mm-hmm.
But this time...
NFT.
It's NFT... but with Disney, the name on it.
So NFTs are non-fungible tokens. So essentially a picture that acts like currency.
Yep.
That's what it comes down to. It's a picture that acts like cryptocurrency and has a value and
So it's going to be called Disney Pinnacle.
Okay.
And essentially what it's going to do is it will make your favorite Disney characters, Pixar characters, Star Wars characters, and possibly in the future Marvel characters to be NFT pins. So they're going to be digital pins. So similar to like the Ape Yacht Club and stuff like that. All they are is that you get the picture with the little certificate with it and it says, I own this. This is mine. You can't have it unless you paid me.
Yeah.
Big money for it.
Yes.
That kind of thing. It
works on blockchain and all that stuff.
Yeah, it doesn't say how much they're going to start at price-wise, which I don't really want to know anyway.
Yeah.
But Disney is definitely investing a lot of money into this, and we're waiting to see it just flop real hard again, because nothing NFT has gone well.
No,
in fact, least in the future, or at least in the past.
Can I just steal a question?
Sure. Yes.
Okay, what is Disney getting out of by selling NFT?
Cash.
Yeah, Disney.
So they're getting cash.
Yes.
Yeah.
And theoretically, the other people would get more cash if they sold their thing for more than they bought it from Disney.
Yeah, essentially so it's
like a pyramid scheme.
Yeah, kind of.
Yep.
It's Beanie Babies. Yep. It's anything that falls into, Franklin Mint things. Anything that you buy with a certificate of authenticity is essentially an NFT.
All right.
It's saying
a little bit more of a basic.
It's saying that this item, whatever it is, mm-hmm. is officially this item. Okay. You are the owner of this item. There are only so many of these items made. In fact, a lot of times they're one-offs.
Mm-hmm.
So you were the owner of this thing. It's not any different than, say, Michael Jordan signing an autograph, or Tom Hiddleston signing an autograph, or mm-hmm. Any person creating a thing that is a unique thing that then we apply value to. So that value can go up and down.
So it's only valuable to the second person if the third person thinks it's worth paying money.
Correct. Mm-hmm. So, NFTs are hinging on that someone thinks this thing has value, and then that value, is going to hold or go up. So again, just very much like and we've had things before, trading cards, any kind of things like that. I use Beanie Babies. At one point, there was a market for a secondary market for a Beanie Baby. So you would get a Beanie Baby. The Beanie Baby would have an assigned value to it. And then if you sold it to another person who wanted it at that value, you would then make money. And this is the same with anything. It's anything that has some sort of fluctuation, yeah. Art,
really even looking at it along the lines of like just media in general, like look mm-hmm. at movies, like certain yeah. movies that you can't find anymore. People are selling the originals for high amounts of money because they know people want the original.
DVDs and
VHSs. Yeah, it's supply and demand. It's supply and demand, and it's interest. I mean, right now, if something is hot and interesting, people want a bunch of it.
Exactly.
So, we're in the perfect season for it. I date back, Miss Melanie dates back to Cabbage Patch Dolls. Mm-hmm. There was a huge craze for Cabbage Patch Dolls, and then Tickle Me Elmo, and then Furby, and probably... I'm trying to think of other things that, there was always that hot, crazy Christmas thing. Some of the game consoles where people were,
Charlie wasn't even around for some of these
things. But I mean, some of those things had.
Well, yeah, I still grew up in the age of waiting outside of a Best Buy for like six hours or 2 days before Black Friday to buy it all.
But I mean,
still some do, but not
so
much.
During the height, we'll just use Tickle Me Elmo now. During the height of the craze with Tickle Me Elmo, that everybody wanted one. You had people selling the Tickle Me Elmos on black market.
Sometimes double or triple of what they were.
And now I think you can go buy a Tickle Me Elmo for almost nothing. Mm-hmm. Same thing with a Furby, same thing with Beanie Babies. You got a bell curve, stuff, value, nobody cares anymore.
Well, because it either gets too high and then people just lose interest because mm-hmm. obviously they understand that it's going to be too much money, the market gets flooded,
exactly. Or any number of things. So
there's a lot of things that kind of roll
and
into
NFTs
it all.
Are sitting on that. And mm-hmm. the one thing that Disney has a distinct advantage of versus the other NFTs, to be honest with you, the other NFTs meant nothing to me mm-hmm. because I didn't have any personal connection to those NFTs. But like as a person who is a Star Wars person, mm-hmm. I own Star Wars memorabilia. I do. It's something I have all over my living room, whatever. It to me makes sense, if I was going to buy an NFT, that's nothing different than me buying an autograph, a picture with an autograph on it of a celebrity from Star Wars. Mm-hmm. It's not that much different. I know people who buy film cells. So after the film is done, back when we did film, after the film is done, they cut it into pieces and then people sold the film cells. Mm-hmm. So people who own Snow White film mm-hmm. cells, and a friend of mine collects that kind of stuff.
Like the movie stop stuff. Motion, mm-hmm. the stop motion. Frames.
Yes.
They'll sell those individually as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Which, again, that's what Disney has again or behind them is that they also have the cult following that most Disney fans will most likely jump on it.
Think about merchandise with all the Disney characters on it. It's everywhere, you know. Yeah. You know, you can buy Mickey Mouse on darn near everything, and you can buy Marvel characters on darn near anything, and you can buy Star Wars on darn near anything, and Muppets. They own all of those properties. Mm-hmm. So that makes sense. That's where the NFTs work for them, potentially. Yeah. I think NFTs are smoke and mirrors. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, I can see the Disney stuff being a kind of, like, a sort of success compared to the other ones, because, like I said, there's more people that would probably go for this because as the Disney name slapped on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but what if they make?
Well, Disney's smart enough to do that.
So
they're smart. Disney, they know how to manage supply and demand. Mm-hmm. If anything they have learned over their existence is how to control the market. That's why the DVDs had the Disney Vault thing, where they'd only release, you know, say Bambi or Pocahontas or Peter Pan every so often.
That was Walt Disney. That was in his will that he wanted every single movie that was released under his name to be re-released every
X amount of time. That's how they also hold on to the copyright and trademark for everything.
So it could be a will thing. It could also just be like business thing. So
yeah, they have modified a lot of copyright laws. So,
but yeah, so that I can see this being a bigger success than some of the other NFTs I've seen before.
Yeah.
But other than that, I'm still skeptical about the NFT stuff. Let's change gears
just a little bit to something else. That's kind of,
As we're slowly running out of time.
We're slowly running out of time, but That's good. So our friends at Netflix, and Netflix you can also attribute to all the other streaming platforms. Mm-hmm. Netflix will no longer support old TVs and Blu-ray players. So if you had a smart TV or a smart Blu-ray player that had Netflix on it, or for example, like the original Wii that had Netflix available on it, Netflix is slowly pulling out support for other things. And that's not uncommon. Mm-hmm. I mean, technology... You know, Netflix needs more memory, and there's not enough memory built into these devices. But this type of obsolescence, I don't think people are really in their minds ready for. Mm-hmm. As that smart TV that you paid a lot of money for when you bought it the first time, that had Netflix, and you use Netflix every day, and all of a sudden your TV, which is still a very functional TV, can't do Netflix. You know, I think this is going to be, it's becoming a shock for people because, and the platforms demand it for one reason or another. They need more memory to make sure that they're streaming at the right quality. They need more memory for their interface. They need more of this. They need more processor. They need more whatever. And I think we're going to end up with a whole bunch of people who have technology that has components that don't function any longer. And I've even seen this, we have a couple of smart TVs and we didn't buy them as smart TVs. It just happened to be what was available at the time here for the library, for some of our signage. Most of the apps on those TVs don't work anymore because the companies behind them either don't exist or they can't support it, you know, and we use them for signage. So it doesn't really matter to us. Signage and big computer monitors, but it doesn't matter for us because it works. But if it's your main media platform and you've invested money into this and all of a sudden now, you know, it doesn't work. I mean, you know, the obsolescence is going to be hard for people to wrap their heads around.
Yeah, it really is. I can agree. I mean, it's no better than buying, let's say you invested in the, I don't know, first or second edition Roku and stuff like that. It's like those eventually will also
fall onto a couple of those.
Yeah, that will eventually fall some into things that don't work category. On them anymore. Exactly. Some things don't work on them anymore. There's things that eventually the technology that you put good money into will either just not support it anymore or you just need to invest in a new one. I mean, that's the problem.
So like going back to a BMW or something like that, you know, I'm sorry, the technology is no longer supported for your airbag. It's not going to deploy.
Oh no.
You know, please go get another car. That would be weird for people to fathom, but this is not any different. You know, it's not as dangerous, frankly, but you know, I kind of went to the extreme there, but still. It's something to wrap your head around. It's something definitely to wrap your head around. So what else you got, Charlie, as we're kind of wrapping up stories and whatnot? Mm-hmm. If not, I've got some stuff.
I'm going to kind of talk about this because this is a little bit interesting. Microsoft is bringing its AI companion called Copilot to Windows 10.
Which is the replacement for Cortana.
Yes.
Which is from Halo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think people didn't understand that reference at first.
When Cortana got put onto 90% Windows. Of the people had no clue exactly. that it was a video
That's
game reference.
That's the only reason why I knew what Cortana even was.
Yep.
But anyway, so... so
it was your AI companion in the Halo games.
Mm-hmm.
I know you're not much of a gamer, Miss Mellon.
So, what's interesting to me about Microsoft bringing Copilot to Windows 10 is that it will end. So, the end of life for Windows 10 is supposed to be 2024 or 2025, right? One of those two.
It's between the two right now. Yeah. There's some vacillation.
But this could mean that Microsoft could be pulling the date back a little bit farther if they're just now bringing AI Copilot to Windows 10. So this could mean that it's a possibility that we may see Windows 10 maybe go out more 2030.
Or I don't maybe know about that far. 26, 27.
26, 27,
at
you
best,
think?
Yeah. Okay. It all depends on where they're at. They've ramped up. You know, we've gone from a couple of long-lived OSs for a while from Microsoft to they're trying to roll out another one very quickly, but they're giving you a free upgrade in most cases. So, you know, you can go from 10 to 11. You have to pay for 11. They're rolling it quickly, and I sort of understand, and I sort of don't. I mean, you know, we lasted on 7 forever and XP forever.
And 10's only been around for what, 8? Maybe no, 6 to 8 years.
Six
I think
eight
something
years.
Like that. Yeah, because yeah, I remember getting Windows 10 coming from 8.
Yeah,
so. That was like my first big thing in the house for my tech self was just to upgrade all the PCs to 10 so that they were up to date.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And things are getting better because the infrastructure was very different between 10 and
7.
There was a big jump between those two. 10, 11, 12, they're all very similar in architecture.
Mm-hmm.
So they won't change very much. So let's see.
So you probably have one more story.
I'm going to do what I consider my fun story. I've got two fun stories, but I'm going to do one fun story and see if I have any time left. So, a couple of folks in some of the university circles.
I'll let you do your story.
All right.
I have to go check on something real quick.
All righty. So thank you, Charlie.
You may finish off with that.
Charlie's got to go check on a patron.
Yes.
So generating electricity from the movement of molecules in a fluid. So, you know, a fluid, a gas, the molecules are moving around. That's why it's either a liquid or a gas. It's kind of basic physics. They've got some space. They're not compressed. So they're floating around and doing their thing. That movement has energy. And so some scientists are working on harnessing that energy of the movement within the fluid. So what does that mean? Well, it's not a lot of energy. You know, it's tiny, minuscule amounts of energy. But maybe the next biomechanical thing is powered by the blood in your body. Maybe your pacemaker doesn't have to have a new battery every so often because the fluid in your body, that's battery and body combined together. I made a portmanteau. Yay. But the fluid in your body is actually providing the battery. Your blood, your tissue, all of that stuff is full of plenty of electricity. I mean, that's the whole premise of the movie The Matrix. Harnessing that electricity to power bio things. You know, maybe it's an artificial retina. Maybe it's artificial limbs. You know, there's a ton of stuff that if we just had better batteries or more of a constant supply of power for, the world would be different. People's lives would be different. And so I'm following the story. I really like this story because I'm very, very interested in, you know, we providing power. It's the self-sufficiency part of humanity. You know, darn it. You know, I can grow my own food. I can harness my own electricity. Mm-hmm. I can harness my own electricity for myself to power my bionic eyes or whatever. So with that, I thank you. I thank you for Charlie, who had to run out. Thank you for joining us on Talking Tech. We'll see you next month for technology stories, technology news, and we answer your questions. And if you're watching this or listening to it after the fact on social media, don't forget you can comment in on this and we will see your comments and we will answer your questions if they come in late. And you can always reach out to us at the library. You can reach out to us on all our social media. You can reach out via phone. via email. You can find us. We're everywhere. So have a wonderful Monday, and we'll see you on the interwebs. Thank you, and have a great day. Mm-hmm.